Thank you, Lawrence, and welcome everybody to the Bitter Information webcast for the New Jersey Basic Generation Service, or BGS, statewide auction process. I'm Chantal Lacasse from Near Economic Consulting, the auction manager for this statewide auction process. I have with me Rachel Northcutt, also from NERA, as well as representatives from the Electric Distribution Companies, or EDCs, to help us respond to any of the questions that you might have during the presentation. As Lawrence mentioned, you can ask your questions in writing through the WebEx interface by locating the Q&A on the right-hand side of your screen, selecting all panelists in the Ask box, and typing in your questions. We'll respond to questions at the end of the presentation, or if we can, we'll respond as we go. Either way, we'll be posting the questions asked and our responses as frequently asked questions, or FAQs, on the BGS auction website. Let me start with a little bit of housekeeping and a disclaimer here that we'll be making various statements throughout the presentation that will be describing or referring to what I'll call the governing documents and agreements, and any such statements are summaries only, and they're qualified in their entirety by the reference on this slide to what I'm calling the governing documents. And those are all the documents included in the filing from the Electric Distribution Company, or EDCs, to the New Jersey Board of Public Utility, or Board, and all those documents in that filing is dated July 1, 2020. And it consists of the EDC's joint proposal, provisional auction rules, so two documents, one for the BGS CIEP auction and one for the BGS RSCP auction, supplier master agreements. There are two of them, one for BGS CIEP, one for BGS RSCP, as well as each EDC's company-specific addendum. So that's four documents for the four EDCs, namely Public Service, Electric and Gas, or PSE&G, Jersey Central, Power and Light Company, JCP&L, Atlantic City Electric Company, or ACE, and Rockland Electric Company, or RICO. All of these documents are posted to the BGS auction website, bgs-auction.com. They're posted to the BGS proceeding page of the auction tab. In this presentation, we'll cover the roles of various parties in the statewide auction process, an overview of the EDC's proposal, specifically the changes from the auction process as had been approved by the board in prior years. We'll talk about the products and rates, then specifically about how the supplier master agreements define the BGS products and what the BGS supplier must provide. Provide an overview of bidding in the auction, a overview of the auction process, including the process for suppliers to apply to participate in the BGS auction. And finally, we'll review the BGS auction website and other sources of useful information for suppliers. There are various parties that are involved in managing the auction process. I've already mentioned the EDCs that are responsible for the proposal that's been made through to the board through the July filing. I also mentioned NERA as auction manager. We administer the auction, including the pre-auction activities, such as the application process. The board will be considering the EDC's proposal with respect to the procurement of supply for their BGS customers and will render a decision on that auction proposal. But the New Jersey Board of Public Utilities doesn't stop its involvement there. It has an ongoing involvement as the auction process unfolds. In particular, board staff is consulted on the setting of various auction parameters, such as the starting prices or the prices in round one of each auction. Board staff and the board have an advisor that monitors the auction process and advises the board throughout the process. as auction manager, will be administering the auction, and once the auction results are available, the board, we have asked through the proposal that the board render a decision on the auction process within 2 business days. And if the board does approve the auction results, then those auction results are binding on the bidders and on the EDCs. I will start by giving an overview of the July filing of the auction proposal from the EDCs to the board. That proposal generally is how to procure supply for the BGS customers, and we'll be giving a high-level overview in this section, being careful to note the changes from the prior approved BGS auction processes, and we'll go into more details in the following sections. There are several objectives to the EDC's proposal to procure supply for their BGS customers. Two of those goals, although the most essential, is first to procure supply for BGS customers at a cost that's consistent with market conditions. The second is to enable participation from a broad spectrum of entities, including energy trading and marketing companies, to participate in the auction and to provide supply for BGS customers by aggregating a portfolio of a wholesale product and providing price risk management services. I'll go a little bit in more detail on the regulatory milestones for the BGS auction process. As I mentioned, the EDCs filed a proposal on July 1st. There were 2 rounds of written comments, initial comments and final comments, as well as an opportunity for parties to provide oral comments at a legislative type board hearing. We're expecting the board decision to be at its agenda meeting in November, which would be on November 18th, 2020, so roughly a month before the deadline to start the application process, or the deadline to submit the first part of the application, the Part 1 application, which right now under the EDC's proposal is set for December 15, 2020. The EDC's propose 2 auctions, as in previous approved auction processes that are separate but are held and managed concurrently. One is the BGS RSCP auction, so RSCP for residential and small commercial pricing. So this is an auction to procure supply for those customers. The auction determines an all-in price in cents per kilowatt hour, and suppliers are paid this price for every kilowatt hour of load served. There's a 3-year supply period. So for this upcoming auction from June 1, 2021 to May 31st, 2024. And there's a rolling procurement structure so that approximately 1/3 of supply for these customers is procured each year for that 3-year supply period. In the BGS RSCP auction, there's going to be 4 products, and each product corresponds to the BGS RSCP load for an EDC. So in that particular auction, the supply will be procured for all 4 EDCs simultaneously. The BGS CIEP auction, that's the second auction, is for larger commercial and industrial customers, so CIEP for commercial and industrial pricing. And those customers are on an hourly price plan compared to RSCP customers that are on a stable fixed price. The auction would determine a CIEP price in dollars per megawatt day, and suppliers would be paid that price on the basis of capacity obligations for BGS CIEP customers. Suppliers are paid for other components of the supply separately, so are paid for energy at the hourly real-time energy spot price and are paid a predetermined rate for ancillary services. Suppliers are also paid a CIEP standby fee, and that fee is levied on all CIEP customers. So what that means is that that fee is paid not only by customers that are taking BGS CIP that are on the service, but also from customers that are served by third-party suppliers that are not on BGS, but that if they were to return to BGS, would do so on a CIP tariff or rate. The supply period for CIP is just 1 year, so for this upcoming auction from June 1, 2021 to May 31st, 2022. In the auction, same thing as for BGS RSCP, there are four products where a product corresponds to the BGS CIP load for each EDC. And what that means is that the supply for all EDCs are procured simultaneously through a single auction. The auction format that is proposed is called a clock auction, and that's a design that's both a multiple product auction and a multiple design auction. So I've already talked about the fact that the auction is a multiple product auction and that we would be procuring supply for all EDCs at once. It's also a multiple round design, which means that the bidding proceeds in rounds. In a given round, suppliers state how much they're willing to supply at the prices that are given to them by the auction manager. And given these amounts that are bid, so suppliers are bidding amounts, not prices, given the amounts that are bid, if for a given EDC, the amount that's bid exceeds the amount that's necessary to be procured, then the price comes down for that particular EDC. And in the next round, suppliers again get to state how much they want to supply at the new prices that have ticked down from the prior round. And that process continues until the amount that is bid falls to the amount that's needed for each of the EDCs. And importantly, during the course of the auction, suppliers have the ability, under certain circumstances, to switch their bids from one EDC to another in a given auction in response to relative prices. So that means within the RSCP auction, a supplier can switch their bids from, let's say, PSE&G to JCP&L, but suppliers cannot switch their bids from one auction to the other, so from the CIP auction to the RSCP auction. The auction determines a single uniform price for each of the EDCs, both on the CIP side in dollars per megawatt day and the RSCP side in cents per kilowatt hour. The supplier obligations for winners at these auctions are specified in documents called the BGS Supplier Master Agreements, or SMAs. There are different payment terms between CIP and RSCP, as we've already seen, given it's an all-in price on the RSCP side. And on the CIP side, there are payments for the suppliers on the CIP price on the basis of the capacity obligation and for other components of the supply. So the BGS RSCP Supplier Master Agreement and the BGS CIP Supplier Master Agreement will be different in the way they talk about the payments to suppliers, but otherwise the terms are the same across the two SMAs. In each case, it's a contract that's between the BGS supplier and the EDC that is, in that case, acting as an agent for their retail customers. The SMAs are part of the proposal before the board, so they are filed as part of the July filing. And the board will render a decision on the entirety of the auction proposal, including on the terms of the supplier master agreements. The final agreements that will be in compliance with the board order will be approved by the board prior to the auction and therefore will be non-negotiable. So there is a uniform supplier master agreement contract in the whole state, so across all of the EDCs. The opportunities to provide comments on the supplier master agreements and on the auction documents in general are during the regulatory proceedings. So those were the comment processes that I alluded to before, the two rounds of written comments, as well as the opportunity to address the board at its legislative type hearing. The main change to the EDC's auction proposal compared to prior approved auction processes by the board is to remove transmission from the BGS products. In prior approved processes, and transmission has been issued in prior proceeding under the past established process, if there was a change, so an increase in the transmission rate, then the EDCs would file to increase the rate for customers and to pay suppliers. However, if there was not a final FERC order, then the board could approve the collection of the transmission rate increases from customers, but not approve the payment of suppliers for those transmission costs. And that, in turn, created a disparity in timing between the payment by suppliers to PJM of those transmission costs on the one hand, and on the other hand, the receipt of payments from such for such costs from the EDCs. In its order approving the 2020 auction in November 2019, the board called for parties to work to resolve these issues related to the disparity in timing between when BGS suppliers pay for transmission costs and when they're paid by the EDCs for such costs. The EDCs are proposing the removal of transmission from the BGS product, meaning that it would be the EDCs rather than the BGS supplier that would be going forward responsible for transmission and transmission-related costs. That change is reflected in the supplier master agreement, as are proposed by the EDC and part of their auction proposal before the board. So that deals with the transmission costs going forward, starting with the winner at the upcoming 2021 auction. The EDCs are also proposing to provide each current BGS supplier with the option to make that same change, so to remove transmission from the product for existing BGS contracts. If that proposal is approved by the board, it would mean that it would also remove this issue going forward, not just for winners at the upcoming auction, but for also BGS suppliers that have won in prior auction and still have existing contracts. In terms of any amounts that are held by the EDCs because they have been collected from customers but not yet paid to BGS suppliers, there's a separate proceeding in which staff has requested comments on a potential mechanism for the release of these amounts that are called the collect and don't pay amount. Just to address kind of a question, this presentation that you see on today's webcast will be posted today on the BGS auction website, but has not been posted yet. Aside from that change to the BGS product to remove transmission from the BGS product, the BGS supplier remains responsible for providing full requirement service, all of what would be the other components of full requirement service under the prior approved process, namely energy, capacity, ancillary services. BGS suppliers are responsible for fulfilling obligations and the requirements under the Renewable Portfolio Standards, or RPS, as well as to provide any other services as may be required by PJM. All BGS suppliers are physically and financially responsible for the hour-by-hour provision of electricity to BGS customers, and BGS suppliers will be the load-serving entities. That doesn't mean that an applicant needs to be already a load-serving entity to apply to participate in the auction, but if an applicant is not yet a load-serving entity, they have to show that or be able to certify that there's no impediment to the applicant becoming a load-serving entity before the start of the supply period. What I'm going to talk about next on this slide only applies for the BGS RSCP auction and the BGS RSCP supplier master agreement. And this is a continuation of a change that was made last year to deal with the fact that the base residual auction for the delivery year 22-23 had been delayed. And this is due to the delay at FERC in their decisions on the PJM changes to the capacity market. And at that point, the EDCs had proposed and the board had approved the use of a capacity proxy price for that delivery year. And because the actual capacity price was not going to be known at the time of the auction, there was a mechanism put into the supplier master agreement so that the BGS RSCP supplier will be paid the difference between the actual price or rate it pays for capacity on the one hand and the capacity proxy price on the other hand for the 22-23 delivery year. So that was the proposal made last year and accepted by the board. And this year, we have two base residual auctions that have been delayed that impact the BGS RSCP supply period, namely the base residual auction for the 22-23 delivery year, as well as the base residual auction for the 23-24 delivery years are delayed. And given current timelines in PJM compliance filings and the recent decision by the FERC, it's now apparent that the capacity prices for these delivery years will not be known at the time of the BGS RSCP auction. The EDCs propose the same mechanism, namely to set capacity proxy prices for each of those two delivery years and then to true up the rate actually paid by suppliers to that proxy price. So that would be an additional payment for BGS RSCP suppliers in those specific delivery years only. The rates for BGS customers are set on the basis of the auction prices. So the EDC's rate design is the method that translates those auction prices into rates for BGS customers. The fact that they do reflect the auction prices means that they are market-based. For the BGS RSCP customers, the auction price determines all-in price cents per kilowatt hour that is then translated into customer rates for each rate class, and transmission is charged separately. For BGS CIEP, the auction determines a final CIEP price, which is charged to customers on the basis of their capacity obligation. Just like there are separate components to the payment of BGS CIEP suppliers, there are separate components for the payment for customers for other components of the supplies that are separate. The rate design is part of each company-specific addendum for each of the EDCs. It's part of the EDC's proposals before the board, and therefore is also subject to approval by the board. So I'll step away from the regulatory proceeding that we've been talking about and talking about the proposal to discuss a little bit the pre-auction activities that occur prior to the board decision. We will be posting the illustrative part one and part two application forms today, and that will provide on a preliminary basis pending the board's decision the requirements for applying to participate in the auctions. Importantly, there are a couple of comment processes one of which is a comment process going on right now that have upcoming deadlines next week, next Tuesday to be precise, October 27th, 2020. One is the deadline to express interest in participating in an alternate guarantee process, and those are for entities that have corporate policies that preclude them from using the standard form of guarantee that's appended to the supplier master agreement. The second is a process to propose modification or provide comments to the standard form of the letters of credit. So there are pre-auction letters of credit for purposes of providing financial guarantees to support indicative offers with the Part 2 application. And there are post-auction letters of credit that are the letters of credit that would be used during the delivery period as financial guarantees under the terms of the supplier master agreement. So those are the deadlines for suppliers to and their financial institutions to provide comments on those letters of credit, also next Tuesday, October 27th. Those will then be reviewed by a committee of the EDCs, and responses will be provided to suppliers the week after, by November 5th. And finally, on November 9th, the auction manager will be posting all acceptable modifications to the letter of credit that are acceptable on an optional basis. So that will be substantially before suppliers have to provide materials for the Part 1 and the Part 2 application, which is in the mid-December timeframe. The other announcement or posting that we'll be making on November 20th is with respect to the statewide minimum and maximum starting prices. So we talked about the fact that the auction is a multiple round process, and we announce ahead of time a range within which the prices for round one of the auctions will be selected. And that announcement, which typically has been prior to the board decision, is a couple of days after this year on Friday, November 20th. So I'll talk a little bit more about the opportunity to provide comments on the letters of credit, and there's going to be a little bit more on some details of the process later on in the presentation. There are two forms of the draft pre-auction letters of credit this year that are available for comment. One is a hard copy letter of credit, so that provides for hard copy delivery of the pre-auction letter of credit, and that is the same standard format that has been used in prior approved auction processes. This year, and this is new, there's a draft electronic pre-auction letter credit that provides for delivery of the letter credit through electronic means only. That means via email to the auction manager. This dual process addresses the possibility that due to COVID-19, it's possible that personnel, the auction managers, the EDC, suppliers, and even banks would still be working from home as the auction process unfolds. So it's important that you have a look with your financial institution at what those different terms are to allow and the electronic transmission of the pre-auction letter credit, and that you provide any comments that your financial institution might have. The post-auction letter credit is also available for comment and posted to the BGS auction website. There's also a comment process document that provides the details of how to provide those comments exactly, but generally speaking, you're providing modification simply by submitting a red line of these documents in Microsoft Word by the deadline of October 27th. As I mentioned, we're providing two standard forms for the pre-auction letter of credit. One addressing the possibility that the working from home environment would be maintained and continue throughout the auction process. And if that is the case, there may be other modifications to procedures that will need to be made compared to how the auction process unfolded in prior years. We intend on providing all these modifications and discussing any changes that will be necessary for the procedure at the next webcast, which is on December 3rd, which will be after the board decision on the EDC's proposal, so that we can provide all the final details of the auction process as approved by the board and any modification in procedures that we would need to address working from the working from home environment. If in the meantime you have specific concerns or questions in this regard, please send us your comments at our email address, which is bgs-auction@nira.com. So that concludes the overview of the EDC's auction proposal for this year, as was provided through the July filing. In this next section, I'll talk in a little bit more detail about the products at each of the two auctions, the setting of customer rates. And in talking about the products, I'll provide a little bit more detail on supplier master agreement, in particular, providing the levels for the capacity proxy prices for the BGS RSCP supplier master agreement, and talking in more detail about the provisions that were changed to address the removal of transmission from the BGS product. Talking about the products first, as we mentioned, the products for in the BGS RSCP auction are is going to be the BGS RSCP load for each of the EDCs, and same thing similarly for the BGS CIEP auction. So I'll walk through how that BGS RSCP load or BGS CIEP load is derived and how it's divided into a number of units that are called tranches. So the EDC, a given EDC's total BGS load is its total retail load in its territory minus the load that is served by third-party suppliers, or TPSs, so basically the entire retail load minus the load that is shopping by taking service from a third-party supplier. The BGS CIEP load is the load of specific customer rate classes that are served at transmission voltages and load of other larger customers where the threshold or the CIEP line is currently set at 500 kW. All those customers are interval metered, and the BGS CIEP load for a given EDC is divided into a number of tranches. The number of tranches that's set is so that on an eligible basis, the size of a tranche is approximately 75 megawatts. Whatever that number of tranches, if you take 100% and you divide by the number of tranches for a given EDC, that provides the size or the size of a tranche or the percentage that's attributable to one tranche, meaning that if a supplier wins one tranche, it will be responsible for that percentage of the requirements of the BGS CIEP customers and of providing all services necessary under the full requirements product for that percentage. BGS customers, whether it's CIEP or RSCP, are free to come and go from BGS, so BGS suppliers do take on the migration risk. So that was for CIEP load. For RSCP, the RSCP load is established as a residual. In other words, BGS RSCP load is the EDC's total BGS load minus the EDC's BGS CIEP load. And similarly, as for the BGS CIEP load, the BGS RSCP load is divided into a number of tranches, and those tranches are a little bit bigger than for CIEP, so roughly, a little less, but roughly 100 megawatts on an eligible basis. And whatever that number of tranches is for a given EDC, taking 100% and dividing by the number of tranches will give you the size of each of those tranches. And we'll see that on the next slide. On this slide, you have the BGS RSCP products. So for each of the EDC, the RSCP peak load share in megawatt, as well as the tranche target, which is the number of tranches to be procured in the BGS RSCP auction. The number of tranches that you have here are just the number of tranches for the upcoming BGS RSCP auction. So for one auction, remember that each auction procures about one third of the total number of tranches, approximately one third, on a rolling basis for a period of 3 years. So the total number of tranches for each of BDCs, total number of BGS RSCP tranches for PSA&G, for example, is 85, and 29 of these are up in the upcoming auction. The size of the tranches, which is the percentages I was talking about, are in the next column, and then the megawatt measure, which is the applicable percentage of the RSCP peak load share. So for RICO, for example, there's one tranche in the upcoming auction. RICO has four tranches in total, so the percentage attributable to each tranche is 100 divided by 4, or 25%. The EDCs are proposing two different types of load cap for the BGS RSCP auction. So that's a limit to the number of tranches that a bidder can bid and win through the auction. So there's both a statewide load cap as well as EDC-specific load caps. That means that there's going to be a maximum on the number of tranches that a bidder can bid and win statewide across all the EDCs. And then there's also going to be separate limits to the number of tranches that a bidder can bid and win for each specific EDC. And these will be announced at the same time as the minimum and maximum starting prices on November 20th. At that time, there's also going to be an update to the megawatt measures and the RSCP peak load shares. So the data that you see here is the data that was available to the EDCs for their July filing, and there will be an update in November to these numbers. We discussed that the BGS RSCP customer rates are based on the auction prices, which is an all-in cents per kilowatt hour. So to be put a little more details here, the auction prices determine what is a system-wide or average cost for each of the EDCs. And that average cost is determined across all three auctions for the BGS CRAP customers. And the price is seasonally adjusted and then tranche weighted depending on the number of tranches for each of the three auctions. There are then ratios that translate this average cost into a rate for a particular rate class. All classes have seasonal rates, and some classes also have time of day rates. Under the EDC's proposal to remove transmission from the BGS products, the BGS RSCP customers would also pay an EDC-specific and separate transmission charge. As I mentioned, BGS RSCP suppliers provide a full requirements product, including energy capacity, ancillary services, including fulfilling the requirements under the renewable portfolio standards and any other services as may be required by PJM. And to do so, the role of the BGS RSCP supplier is to aggregate a supply portfolio from wholesale sources to be able to provide those services, as well as assess and price volatility, load variability, market price volatility, and migration risk. So as we mentioned before, BGS customers can come and go. So migration, we're using that term to both mean customers leaving BGS and also potentially coming back after taking service from a third-party supplier. BGS RSCP suppliers then provide price risk management services, meaning that they stand ready to supply BGS RSCP customers at a fixed price, even if there are market fluctuations. So there's a number of risks. The more obvious ones being the migration risk that we discussed and also load and weather risks. There are perhaps less obvious risks, such as longer-term changes to the composition of the RSCP class. So I mentioned that the threshold for CIEP customers is currently at 500 kW. That is something that is subject to change during the BGS RSCP supply period. There could also be changes to the rate design proposed by the EDCs. So the EDCs propose the rate design each year, and there could be changes to that in the future. There's also could be changes to the renewable portfolio standard that could impact BGS RSCP suppliers. I mentioned in the overview of the July filing that the EDCs are proposing to set capacity proxy prices for two delivery years, the 22-23 delivery years and 23-24 delivery years. So those capacity proxy prices are given to you in this table. So they are the same for JCP&L, ACE, and RICO, and a little bit different for PSCNG, and they're different for the two delivery years. In addition to the auction price that would be paid for each kilowatt hour of load served by the BGS RSCP suppliers, then under the EDC's proposal, winning BGS RSCP suppliers will also be paid, or will pay, depending which way the prices are, the difference between the rate that the BGS RSCP supplier actually pays for capacity and the capacity proxy price that was set for that delivery year. Those additional payments occur only during the applicable delivery year. And if you want to see those provisions more specifically, they're provided in Supplements A and B to the BGS RSCP Supplier Master Agreement, or SMA. Turning now to the BGS CIEP products, you have on this slide the CIEP peak load share in megawatts for each of the four EDCs and the number of tranches that is set so that the megawatt measure or the size of the tranche is approximately 75 megawatts on an eligible basis. So that's not, by when I say eligible basis, I mean not just the customers that are taking the service that are on BGS CIEP, but all customers that are either taking the service or customers that are with third-party suppliers, but if they came back to BGS, would have to do so on a CIP tariff or rate. So 75 megawatts on an eligible basis, and you have here the tranche sizes, again, 100% divided by the number of tranches. So for RICO, for example, with one tranche, the size of the tranche is 100%. The BGS CIEP customer rates are based on the auction prices, but there are other components for other components of the product. So the auction determines a CIEP price. Customers pay that price on the basis of their capacity obligation. And parallel to the payments for the BGS CIEP supplier, BGS CIEP customers also pay the hourly real-time energy price, a predetermined ancillary service rate, and as well as a separate transmission charge specific to the EDCs. And a reminder, we discussed that in a prior slide, all CIEP customers, so shopping and non-shopping CIEP customers, pay the CIEP standby fee. BGS CIEP suppliers also provide a full requirement service. So the same as for RSCP supplier providing energy capacity ancillary services, fulfilling RPS obligations, and providing any other services as may be required by PJM. The difference is in the way that they are compensated for providing those services. So suppliers are paid the auction determined CIEP price, the CIEP standby fee, the real-time hourly spot price for energy, and then predetermined EDC-specific rates for ancillary services. So BGS CIEP suppliers benefit from a stable revenue on the entire CIEP customer base through the CIEP standby fee. And given that they're paid with for energy in the real-time market, they also have the ability to arbitrage day-ahead and real-time markets. They face a number of risks, including migration risk of customers both leaving BGS and coming back to BGS. There's also a risk that of the fact that there is a fixed payment for ancillary services, and of course that there could be changes to the renewable portfolio standards. So I mentioned several times the proposal by the EDCs to remove transmission from the BGS products. I'll give a little more detail as to where those changes are for your review and the BGS supplier master agreement. So this applies both to RSCP and CIEP. So the transfer of the responsibility is through the BGS billing line items. And you have on this slide the line items, the billing line items that would be the responsibility of each of the EDCs, including the network integration transmission service or NITS, the transmission enhancement chargers or tax, and the generation, the activation charges. This table is part of a sample PGM invoice, so that's kind of a new appendix that has been added to each of the BGS supplier master agreement, and the sample PGM invoice lists all of the PGM billing line items and also provides this table of those billing line items that are the responsibility of the EDCs under the EDC's proposal. So that sample PGM invoice is provided as Appendix G in the BGS RSCP Supplier Master Agreement, and Appendix D, D as in domino, in the BGS CIEP Supplier Master Agreement. In addition to that new appendix of providing the sample PGM invoice, the overview of the modifications that have been made to supplier master agreement to remove transmission from the BGS products are as follows, and also deal with a couple of additional kind of changes. So first is the removal of the mechanism as approved in the prior auction processes of tracking and paying amounts for changes in the transmission rate that had received a final FERC order. So there were various provisions in the supplier master agreement in the prior auction processes related to this mechanism, including several definitions, section 15.9, which was the main section that would describe this mechanism, and section 4.3 of the survival of obligations also mentioned that provision. That has now been replaced by giving responsibility for transmission to the EDC, and that's stated specifically in section 2.2, obligation of the parties, that then ties into the appendix of the sample PGM invoice and which billing line items are transferred to the EDCs. Additional changes include in section 2.7 to have the parties establish and work with PGM to establish the PGM e-accounts necessary for the transfer of the PGM billing line items. The removal, that's only for CIEP, of a separate payment for transmission, that was the case in the prior approved auction process. And section 9.2 describes how PGM will be invoicing the EDC for those transmission-related items. And finally, the new section 15.9 is one in which the parties would make conforming changes to the SMA if there are changes to the PGM agreements. Now, one change that I'll also point out here is that in various places in the BGS supplier master agreement where previously there was fax or facsimile transmission, those references are proposed to be changed to electronic transmission of documents. I mentioned a number of times that within the full requirements product is the fact that BGS RSCP and BGS-CIP suppliers must comply with the Renewable Portfolio Standards, or RPS, by supplying renewable energy credits, or RECs, or solar energy credits, or SRECs. Those suppliers are responsible for those requirements, the compliance with Class 1 and Class 2 requirements under the RPS, and solar have to be demonstrated by providing the sufficient number of RECs and SRECs as issued by PJM GATS. To be able to do that, suppliers must register with GATS, open a retail load serving entity account, and then transfer the REC and SRECs to the EDCs by the deadline set by the board. A reminder that the solar obligations changed in May 2018 after the passing of the new Clean Energy Act. And the Clean Energy Act specifically exempted BGS contracts that were executed prior to the enactment of the Act in May 2018. Any increased solar obligations that are avoided by those exempt BGS contracts in a given energy year or EUI are then allocated to the BGS contracts that are not exempt in the following two energy year in equal proportion. So for example, the increased solar obligation that's avoided by exempt BGS contract in energy year 2021 is going to be made up by non-exempt BGS contracts in both energy year 2022 and energy year 2023. And an energy year starts in June of the prior year and ends in May of that year. So energy year 2022 means June 1, 2021 to May 31st, 2022. Starting with energy year 2024, there's going to be no more exempt contracts and therefore no increased solar obligations to be made up by non-exempt BGS contracts. Now, the fulfillment of the solar obligation for non-exempt BGS contracts is counted towards the Class 1 requirements. We have in the past and will continue to make available to bidders a illustration or example of those calculations of the obligation. So that concludes the overview of the BGS Supplier Master Agreement, products and rates. And now I'll turn it over to Rachel to talk about bidding in the auctions.
Thank you, Chantal. Good morning, everyone. As Chantal said, in this next section, I'll provide more information on bidding in the auctions. As we discussed earlier, the proposed format of the auctions is a clock auction, and specifically the format is a multi-product and multi-round design. And what we mean by multi-product is that the tranches for all EDCs are procured at once, and what we mean by multi-round is that the auction proceeds in a number of rounds. And in a given round, the auction manager suggests prices for each of the EDCs, and suppliers state the number of tranches that they are willing to supply at the suggested prices. If there is excess supply, meaning that there are more tranches that are bid than are needed in a given round, then the prices in the auction will tick down. And as the auction progresses, suppliers can switch their bids from one EDC to another in response to changes in price. This slide provides an example of the clock auction format from the perspective of the BGS RSCP auction. And you see data here for two rounds, rounds one and two. In round one, the price of 15 cents per kilowatt hour is the same across all EDCs. And I'll note here that the prices in this example are illustrative, so it's not necessarily the case that the prices in round one will be the same across all EDCs in the actual auction. So at the prices shown here, suppliers would be asked to state the number of tranches that they're willing to supply for each EDC. The number bid column gives the total number of tranches bid across all bidders for each EDC. And the number to buy column lists the target for each EDC, which is the number of tranches needed for that EDC. Excess supply is calculated as the difference between the number of tranches needed and the number of tranches bid for that EDC. And in this example, the number of tranches bid for RICO is 1, and the number of tranches needed is also 1. So excess supply for RICO is 0. But the auction will not end for RICO. And that is because bidders have the ability to switch their bids from one EDC to another in subsequent rounds. So it's possible that in a later round, suppliers will switch back into RICO. And generally speaking, the auction will end for all EDCs at the same time to allow the possibility of suppliers switching in any given round. In this example, there is excess supply in the auction, so the auction will move into round 2. And the prices will tick down for each EDC for which there is excess supply. So that's PSE&G, JCP&L, and ACE. The amount by which the prices will tick down depends on what is called the oversupply ratio, which is the ratio between the amount of excess supply that's actually on the EDC compared to the maximum excess supply that that EDC could have. And generally, the higher the oversupply ratio, the higher the excess supply, and the more the price will tick down for that EDC. With the new prices for round 2, suppliers again state the number of tranches that they're willing to supply for each EDC, and we see in this example that suppliers have switched their tranches around, and there are fewer tranches bid on PSE&G compared to round 1, and now more tranches bid on JCP&L and RICO. There's now positive excess supply for all EDCs, so the prices for all EDCs will tick down this round. And this process continues until there is no more excess supply on any of the EDCs, and at that point, the prices will not tick down any further. I'll discuss here a few main features of the auctions, one being that any offer presented in a round of the auction is binding. So if a supplier has bid a number of tranches on an EDC in a round, and if the price for that EDC is not reduced in the next round, the bidder cannot reduce the number of tranches bid on that EDC. Also, the total number of tranches bid across all EDCs cannot increase. Bidders can switch their bids in a round and bid more tranches on one EDC, but to do so, they must decrease the number of tranches bid on another EDC. That the auction closes on all EDCs at once. In this way, winners in an auction are determined for all EDCs at once, and so are the auction clearing prices. And this brings us to the fourth feature, and that's that all winners in an auction receive the same auction clearing price for that EDC in that auction. So we've discussed that the auction features a multi-round design. Now, in a round, there are 3 phases, a bidding phase, a calculating phase, and a reporting phase. The bidding phase is the time allotted in a round where suppliers state the number of tranches that they're willing to supply at the suggested price for each EDC. And once the bidding phase ends, the calculating phase begins, and this is when the auction manager tabulates the results of the round, as well as the next round's price for each EDC. Once these calculations are complete, the reporting phase begins, and bidders will then have access to the next round's prices for each EDC. And at this time, bidders will also have access to an indication of the total excess supply in the auction for that round. Once the reporting phase ends, the bidding phase of the next round begins, and the cycle continues until the auction ends. A bid in round 1, or the first round of the auction, is relatively simple in that it's the number of tranches a supplier is willing to bid for each EDC. It is possible that the volume can be reduced in round 1 of an auction, but this would only be done if it is necessary to ensure the competitiveness of the bidding environment. Whether this adjustment is necessary is decided on the basis of interest in the first round of bidding. And if the volume must be reduced, then it is reduced in a way that will ensure that there is sufficient tranches bid for each tranche to be procured. In subsequent rounds, bidders can leave their bids unchanged, so they can bid the same number of tranches for each EDC that they bid in the previous round. And if a price for an EDC has ticked down, a bidder can reduce the number of tranches bid on that EDC by either withdrawing tranches and removing them from the auction, or by switching, which is bidding those tranches on one or several other EDCs. And remember here that a bidder cannot increase the total number of tranches it bids in the auction, but can only decrease the total number that it bids or switch bids amongst the EDCs. I mentioned that in the reporting phase of a round, bidders have access to various information on the results of that round. Bidders will have access to a report about the bidder's own bid from that round, but will not have access to information about any other bidder's bid. Bidders will also have access to the price for each EDC for the next round, as well as an indication of the total excess supply in the auction for that round. The example on this slide is from the perspective of the BGS CIEP auction, and demonstrates some of the information provided to bidders in the reporting phase. And you'll see here in the second row of this table that the after the results were tabulated in the calculating phase of here round five, the actual value of total excess supply in the auction is between 76 and 80 tranches. Again, the auction closes on all EDCs at once when total excess supply is zero, and at this point prices can no longer tick down. And at the end of the auction, again, all winners for an EDC will receive the same auction clearing price for that EDC in that auction. Under the EDC's proposed process, once the auctions have closed, the board will render its decision on the auction results within 2 business days of the close of the last auction. The board does have the option of rendering a decision on the results of each auction at different times. And if the board accepts the results of the auction, the EDCs and the winning suppliers must execute the supplier master agreements within 3 business days of the board's decision. Additionally, any security required under the creditworthiness standards of the supplier master agreement is posted upon contract execution. In this next section, I'll provide an overview of the auction process, and I'll also offer some general information on applying to participate in the auctions. First, the board plays a key role in the auction process because, as we mentioned before, the board has the final say on all aspects of the EDC's proposal. The board reviews the proposal and takes into consideration any comments from other stakeholders, as well as the EDCs, and then it determines whether the proposal is approved, and if it's approved, whether the proposal or any included documents require changes. This means that the final approved versions of the auction rules, supplier master agreements, and auction process may be different than what's presented here today. Following the board's decision on the EDC's proposal, if the board approves the proposal, the EDCs will make a compliance filing that will include the final auction rules and supplier master agreements for the auction. And these final documents will then be made available on the BGS website for bidders to review. But preliminary versions of these files that were included as part of the EDC's July filing are currently available on the BGS website. This slide lists some key dates that are to come after the board's decision. One is that following the board's decision, bidders will be able to begin submitting their application materials to to become eligible to participate in the auctions. The Part 1 application is expected to be made available on December 1st, and the deadline for bidders to submit their Part 1 application is December 15th at 12 p.m. The Part 2 application will become available after the Part 1 application window has closed, and bidders will need to submit their Part 2 application by January 14th. Bidders that successfully fulfill the requirements of the Part 1 and Part 2 application will then be eligible to participate in the auctions in early February. Bidders can apply to participate in one or both of the BGS CIEP and BGS RSCP auctions by completing the Part 1 and then the Part 2 applications. The Part 1 and Part 2 applications are submitted through two separate online forms that will be available at bgs-application.com. To access the online applications, bidders will need a set of login credentials. And if you're a returning bidder, the auction manager team will automatically reissue these login credentials to you closer to when the Part 1 application becomes available. New bidders that have never received login credentials to access the applications will need to request login information by either sending a request from the BGS application website or by sending an email to the auction manager at bgs-auction@nira.com. But be sure to include your contact information if you do send this request by email. In general, both the Part 1 and Part 2 applications will require bidders to provide various information, provide supporting documentation, and complete and upload additional files called inserts. Inserts are separate Microsoft Word files that applicants will need to complete and then upload to the online form. Also, both the Part 1 and Part 2 applications will require bidders to make a number of certifications, including agreeing to the terms of the Supplier Master Agreement and the auction rules. Again, the final versions of the auction rules and Supplier Master Agreements for purposes of making these certifications are filed to be in compliance with the board's decision on the BGS proposals. So the final versions, again, may be different than what is presented here today. This slide provides some of the different requirements of the Part 1 and Part 2 applications. For example, in the Part 1 application, bidders will provide contact information for the applicant, including information for an authorized representative and a set of additional nominees. And these individuals will be copied on all correspondence from the auction manager. Note here that there are no state licenses requirement to participate in the BGS auctions. However, a BGS supplier must be a load-serving entity in PJM by the start of the supply period. Applicants that are not yet BGS suppliers will need to show that they are either already an LSE or they must certify that nothing impedes them from becoming an LSE. Bidders also provide financial information and credit ratings in the Part 1 application that will be used to determine the amount and type of pre-auction security a bidder must provide with its Part 2 application. Bidders will also need to provide the same information for their guarantor if they're choosing to rely on one. And if a bidder satisfies all requirements of the Part 1 application, that bidder is said to be a qualified bidder, and only qualified bidders may submit a Part 2 application. With the Part 2 application, bidders must name an indicative offer, which is the number of tranches a bidder is willing to bid at the minimum and maximum starting prices in each auction. Bidders must also provide pre-auction security with their Part 2 application, and this is provided in the form of a pre-auction letter of credit, and for some bidders, also a letter of intent to provide a guarantee or a letter of reference from a bank. The amount of pre-auction security is determined by a bidder's indicative offer at the maximum starting price that they submit and provide in their Part 2 application. And for the BGS CIEP auction, that amount is $375,000 per tranche. And for the BGS RSCP auction, that amount is $500,000 per tranche plus any additional pre-auction security that may be required depending on the credit information that the bidder provided with its Part 1 application, or if that bidder is relying on a guarantor. If the bidder completes and satisfies the requirements of both the Part 1 and Part 2 application, that bidder is said to be a registered bidder and is eligible to participate in the auctions. But ahead of submitting these application materials, bidders have the opportunity to review and propose modifications to the draft forms of the pre-auction and post-auction letters of credit. Again, the BGS Auction Manager has made available both a draft hard copy pre-auction letter of credit and a draft electronic pre-auction letter of credit. And these are available on the contract and credit page of the BGS Auction website. Bidders are welcome to provide comments to one or both the hard copy and electronic pre-auction letters of credit, but any and all proposed modifications must be submitted to the BGS Auction Manager as redlined Microsoft Word files. The EDCs will then review each proposed modification and either revise the standard form of the applicable letter of credit, approve the use of the modification on an optional basis, or reject the proposed modification entirely. The deadline to submit proposed modifications to the letters of credit is this upcoming Tuesday, October 27th. And these comments should be sent to the auction manager by email, bgs-auction@nira.com. Bidders proposing modifications will receive a response from the auction manager that will indicate which proposed modifications are acceptable to the EDCs and which are not. And this response will be sent to you on November 5th. And then on November 9th, the auction manager will post a list of all of the acceptable modifications to the letters of credit. And this will also be available on the contract and credit page of the website. Bidders planning to rely on the financial standing of a guarantor should review the form of guarantee that's included as an appendix to the supplier master agreement. Bidders with corporate policies preventing them from using the standard form of the guarantee may propose an alternate form of guarantee by participating in the alternate guarantee process. Bidders interested in participating in this process should send an email to the auction manager, and then we'll provide you with additional information about requirements and deadlines. The deadline to express interest in this process is also this upcoming Tuesday, October 27th. Please also note that there are a number of minimum requirements for an alternate form of guarantee, and this list of requirements can be found on the contract and credit page. Then to wrap up today's presentation, I'll go over the BGS Auction website and point out some additional resources for bidders considering participating in the auctions. First, our BGS website address is bgs-auction.com. And on this site, bidders can find the auction rules and supplier master agreements, as well as a detailed calendar that lays out the auction timeline. We also have a contact us page where you can submit to us any questions you might have about the auctions. And also on this page, you can register to receive announcements about the auctions. Bidders also have access to various data located on the monthly data page and on the additional data page. These can be found on the data room tab of the website. Specifically, the EDCs make available aggregate data, as well as BGS CIEP and BGS RSCP specific data, including hourly load and peak load allocation files. We also include switching statistics so that bidders can see the amount of migration for each EDC when customers switch from taking BGS to taking service from a third-party supplier. Again, you may submit questions to the auction manager through the BGS website, but you can also send questions to us via email. Bidder questions and responses will eventually be posted to the BGS website on our FAQs page, But any sensitive or confidential information that might be within the question or answer will be removed before posting. This last slide provides a number of other links to various pages on the PJM website, including their page regarding the reliability pricing model, as well as their page related to PJM gas. And that concludes the presentation portion of this webcast.